Hello, everyone. Let me know how the audio is so we could get started. I see Soha saying, hi, Armin. Hi, Soha. And I also see Music Guy saying, hi, Armin. Hi, Music Guy. Great. So we could get started. Oh, also, we're going to be answering questions. We'll first go through the patron questions. If you want to be a patron, link in the description. Soha is saying, reminding everybody, Soha is doing my job for me. Thank you so much, Soha. Reminding everybody that they could like, share the video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell notification, do all of these things. This is all for free, so you might as well help us out so that the channel could grow a little bit. Like, it doesn't cost you anything, it costs you half a second, so just like it so the channel grows just a tiny bit, okay? I would be very grateful if you could do that, okay? Cool. So we have a whole bunch of patron questions, and then after that, I'll go through the live chat questions just so I could show everybody how all of this works. That's not how it works. If I could, okay, here. Let me do a screen share. So there we go. Yeah, so on Patreon, right, on the Secular Geodesist Patreon, we post a link to this stream a day ahead of time. And what you could do as a patron is that this will only be accessible to a patron. You'll post your questions right under it for me to answer here live on air. So that's how all of that works. Okay, cool. Okay, Secular Proton is here. Soha is confirming that the audio is great. Thank you so much, Soha. Also, Music Guy, thank you for that. Cool. All right, let's go through the questions. I'll try to go through the questions so we could maybe answer some live chat questions as well. Okay, we'll see. By the way, right after the stream, like you just, if you look at the main, the homepage of the channel, right, we have another stream coming up like very soon with about Iran. I don't know if you guys have seen that. So that one is happening in 3 hours right on this channel. Me and Susanna and Catherine Schechtam, as a guest, we're going to be talking about anti-Semitic views from the fundamental views in the Iranian government, right? So look forward to that. So after this, if you have free, just hop over to that other stream, and then we're going to go through all of that with you guys, and maybe we could ask some of your questions to our guests. We'll see. Okay, cool. Anyways, just wanted to let you know that that's happening. Let me see. All right, cool. Let's go through the first question. All right, so first question, Bob is saying, book or movie recommendations for this month? Okay, me and Susanna just recently watched a documentary together, and I want to recommend that. I want to use this opportunity to recommend that to you guys, okay? So this is by the channel DW Documentary, right? And it's called Iraq, Destruction of a Nation, okay? And it's 4 episodes. It is the best documentary I've ever seen. And I have seen documentaries about Iraq. This is the best one out there. If you want to understand Iraq and a whole bunch of other things, especially like the influence of, you know, Iran and United States on Iraq, this is the documentary to watch. So there's 4 episodes, right? The Iran, the Destruction of a Nation, part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4. 4 parts. Okay, so watch that. It's really, really good. Oh, hi, Nagar. Nagar is here. Hi, Nagar. Okay, cool. So watch that. Don't miss this. This is like, you're not going to, if you're interested in anything Middle East related, you're not going to regret watching that. It's really worth your time. Okay. Oh, so somebody's saying, what's it in the live chat? Is what's it called? I just told you what it's called. It's called Iraq, Destruction of a Nation, by the channel DW. I think if you just search on YouTube for Iraq DW, this will show up. Iraq, search for Iraq DW. These will show up, okay? Cool. All right, let's go to the next patron question. Next question is, oh, wow, so look at this. Soha is just provided, look how, for you lazy people, Soha just went and found the link and shared it with you guys. Oh my God. Soha, you're an angel. Soha, you're amazing. Oh, no, Norse is saying, I'm on my cell phone, so that's why I didn't see it clearly. Sorry. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I read it out loud so you could find it. Okay. So just search for Iraq DW. All right. Next patron question. Bobo is saying, when are you calling Apostate Aladdin and Nuria Khan on your show? They're awesome. They are awesome. Okay, so I will try. Wait, why am I still full screen? Not full screen. Okay. You're right. Okay. You're right. You know what? How about this? I am going to add this to my list right now. Okay. I'm going to add this to my list to just reach out to them. Invite, this is my to-do list. Invite Nuria and Apostate Aladdin, right? Apostate Aladdin. There we go. Okay. Add it to the list. We'll do that as soon as I can, okay? But you have to wait. Oh, thank you, guys. You guys are being so nice in the live chat. All right, next Patreon question. I think this is the last Bobo question. Bobo is also asking, did you ever figure out what happened, what Apostate Imam was actually up to? He's still merrily running a YouTube channel even after being exposed. Well, I mean, it is okay. So, even after being exposed, like, what was we exposed that he's like what a Hindutva fan? I mean, obviously, that's not going to make him stop. That's a lot of people like that, right? So, I don't know. I mean, it does seem like he's very too interested in support being a Hindutva supporter rather than just an Islam critic. And that's, you know, we don't like that. We don't endorse that. I don't know I don't think you could ever know exactly what people's motivations are, but that effectively, that's what it comes down to, right? So yeah, that's a major problem. And also it doesn't seem like he's being honest about a few things, but who knows, right? Yeah, but like, it's not like when you expose somebody, that's going to, I mean, there are millions of people who actually like the fact that he's a Hindutva supporter. Oh, maybe by exposed, you mean what exposed as in his background not being what he claims to be. I mean, some people don't care and some people are not going to know. Like, I have seen so many people in the past couple of decades being exposed for and about so many things, but then there's enough people that would never know about it that you don't have to worry about it. Like, there are so many people that have committed outright frauds, like crimes even, that has been proven beyond reasonable doubt and have been arrested, and there have a whole bunch of people following them that have never heard of it. Like, you can't assume that just because you're aware of something, you know, everybody would become aware of it. Like, no, people would be, a lot of people would be clueless. Yeah, somebody in the live chat saying he seems like a Hindutva guy LARPing as an ex-Muslim. Well, you can never be sure if that's the case, but that's what that's what he comes across as, right? But yeah, I mean, if it was that easy as exposing somebody and then all of a sudden they would have no fans and followers, then we wouldn't have religion, would we? Right. And then if it was that simple. All right. Yeah, I'm not suggesting, Bulbul, that you were suggesting that. I'm just adding my own thoughts on it. Okay, cool. Let's go to the next Patreon question. A secular proton is saying, thoughts on freedom of speech versus defamation cases. Okay, I haven't put a lot of thoughts into what exactly where the line should be, okay? But putting some, just a little bit of thought on it makes me think that, and again, because I'm not married to this position, you guys could tell me what you think. I think defamation cases should be only civil cases rather than criminal cases, right? So I think making it a criminal case makes the government having to monitor what people say, but making it a civil case, then it wouldn't be about something being, first of all, you're not criminalizing speech. You're just making people pay the consequences for the damage of their actions if somebody could prove monetarily that they have been harmed. Like, it would be dependent on somebody to be able to prove that they have been harmed unjustifiably by somebody because of their actions. In that way, you're not criminal. You're stepping one step. You're one far, step away, one more step away from criminalizing words. And the reason why somebody would be being a penalty is not because of the criminalization of speech. It would be because of an unjustifiable way of harming somebody, right? So you have to prove malice. You have to prove damages. And I think that would be a reasonable way for you to, you know, avoid defamation without getting too far into criminalizing speech. I think that would be a good line by just making it a civil issue. Because I know in some places, defamation could be both criminal and part of the both criminal law and civil law. I think like making it just in the domain of civil law would be a better way to make sure avoid the government in getting involved. Because I think also the potential of it being misused by the government, if you put defamation in the domain of criminal law, then you don't even need somebody to prove that they have been damaged, and the government could just come and decide to outlaw certain speech with the excuse of it being defamation. I just think it opens the door room for the government to overreach and silence people that it doesn't want. And that's why I think that would be a good line. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't have any legal expertise. This is my initial thoughts, and I'm just like openly thinking with you guys, and because I have no expertise in this, and I'm just like putting my thought process up, like I am transparently putting my thought process in front of you guys for you to judge. I'm not married to this position, and you should not value my conclusion at all because it comes from very little experience. I just want to show you how I just went about thinking about it, right? Which could be very flawed. But let me know what you think. Wait, let me look at the live chat. And you guys are asking me some questions beyond the Patreon questions. So I need to go and maybe star it so I could come back to it. There we go. Oh, Secular Proton is saying this makes perfect sense. Oh, thank you, Secular Proton. So he likes my commentary on this. Norse mythology is saying freedom of speech should be absolute, except in when you okay. So I don't. Before I read the rest of the sentence, I'm just going to think about this, because when you say freedom of speech should be absolute, except, would that already is a contradiction? So freedom it's not absolute. And maybe, I don't know what you're going to say the rest of it, but when you say except, that means it's not absolute. Except in a number of small certain cases, such as yelling fire in a crowded theater. So that makes it not absolute. That's the very definition of absolute, is that there are, like, within the definition of absolute, you're implying that there, when you say absolute, you're implying that there are no exceptions. So you can't say it should be absolute except. Okay. Otherwise, it's a slippery slope that the religious extremists will probably win. Okay. Also, when you say otherwise, it's a slippery slope, slippery slope is a logical fallacy. So if you say otherwise, it's a slippery slope, you're already using a logical fallacy to come up with a conclusion that is fallacious. So slippery slope means like when somebody says like this will lead to this, this will lead to this, but they have no... So they have no way to show that there's certain that A would lead to B and B would lead to C. There's no strong reason for somebody to believe that line of events will happen. Right? So that's what is that's a slippery slope logical fallacy. So given that you're even citing your own logical fallacy, it shows that no, it doesn't necessarily. You're basically admitting that these events doesn't necessarily have to happen. Like, just because we have we limit freedom of speech to more than the certain examples that you're coming up with doesn't necessarily have to mean it's going to lead to religious extremists winning, right? So if you want to argue that it will, you have to make your case. You have to show that it's it will happen. It's unavoidable. Anyways. Let's go to the next patron question. Secular Proton is asking, should hard drugs be legal? How much effort should government put into fighting war on drugs? You mean fighting the war on drugs or doing the war on drugs? Because, that's a double negative. Fighting the war on drugs or fighting a war on drugs? Because if it's fighting the war on drugs, that means like they're pro drugs. So let me just say, I personally think based on what I've seen, which again, I haven't done a deep dive, but based on the information that I have been exposed to, which might be biased because of me not doing an objective study on it, it seems like decriminalizing all drugs is the way to go to fight drugs. Okay, and there seems to be some good samples to suggest that is the way to go. Again, because I haven't done a deep dive on this, maybe I've been exposed to samples and conclusions that are in favor of this. So, but this is what I have been led to believe based on. So I'm not certain about this, but it seems like decriminalizing all drugs is the best way for you to get the funding out of all these gangs and reduce the violence and monitor and help the people that are most harmfully affected by it. The government could more easily help people avoid or get off of drugs if you decriminalize all of it. Also, there seems to be some of it. Again, I don't know what I can say here on YouTube, but studies seem to suggest that some of them might not even be as harmful as people think, and some of them might even be good for depression, but I don't know because I'm not a medical expert, so do not trust anything I say about this. But if that's the case, if this is the case, which I do not know, then that would even lead, like, making them illegal is even less justifiable than we assumed before, right? But yeah, I mean, imagine how much violence and crime, how much funding for a lot of crime will just drop overnight if all of this becomes legalized. So much violence, so much funding that goes towards violence would just, you know, the source of funding for a lot of these gangs would dry up overnight if you just did that. I mean, we saw that with alcohol in the United States, right? When we legalized it, right? When they legalized it. Do you guys agree? Soha is saying, honestly, okay, I'm for green, but against chemical drugs. Okay, so no, the question is not whether you're personally against it or not for it. The question is, even if you're against it, should it be legal or illegal? Okay, so those are different questions. Also, all drugs are chemical. In fact, everything is chemical. Okay, so I don't know. By chemical, do you mean synthetic? Because the green ones are also chemical. Oh, Nagar is reminding everybody to like the video. Thank you so much, Nagar. Guys, please like the video because that will help our channel grow. Okay. Abraham, I'm going to start your question so I could get to it after I'm done with the patron questions. Guys, if you want to make sure that I notice your questions, maybe like tag secular jihadist. All right. Let's go to the next question. Next question is Secular Sakai. Secular Sakai saying, Armin, as a Canadian, what is your opinion on Louis Riel and his war against the Canadian government in defense of tribal nations and indigenous rights during his lifetime. How do you feel he should be remembered by Canadian society today, since there are those who still view him as a controversial figure? Okay, so I think it's not correct for anybody to have an opinion or a certain opinion about something like this unless they have done a deep dive into what exactly happened. Okay, for example, I know very little. I just know, like, I don't know, he was hanged for treason, right? Because he rose, he started a rebellion against the Canadian government, against, in favor of, like, I don't know, the natives, right? Or like semi-native, because they're half French. The Métis are half French, right? Okay, I don't know. But yeah, so somewhat native background, right? And I think, like, it shows how tribal people are. I think the people who are, like, let's say, for example, he was completely in the right and everything he did was completely good. I don't think people are who are defending him defend him because they looked into what he did exactly and they were like, oh, yeah, he needs to be celebrated as hero. I think for most people, it's good enough to know that he was on the side of the natives. And obviously, if you have the Canadian government on one side and somebody who's on the natives on the other side, then that the ethnicity is by itself, the average, you know, the understanding of what an average Canadian soldier is, you know, armed or what armed forces, what their ethnicity is and what the Métis are, is enough for you to decide that, okay, those are the good guys. You know, Riel was the good guy and the Canadian government was the bad guy. It's just an assumption. Like, oh, yeah, natives against the Canadian government? I don't... Say no more! He's a hero, right? And I just think that's such a... It's just so how tribal we are. Maybe if you actually looked into exactly what he did, you were like, oh, no, he was a criminal. Even, you know, maybe he was a criminal. Maybe you're like, oh, yeah, he's like, yeah, that's... we're against the death penalty, right? So we could say like the hanging was absolutely insane. But maybe, like, if you know more about exactly what he did and what he believed in, you wouldn't be like defending him so strongly. Like, can you be honest with me, guys? Don't you think most people who would be defending him, it's just likely only because of the piece of information that it was the Canadian government against a group of people who their ethnicity is assumed to be that they're always in the right? Right? So I don't know. What do you guys think? Anyways, what I also know about him is that, again, I'm not married to any of my positions, right? Like you guys could correct me if I'm wrong about. I mean, not that many people care about Canadian history, so this is not like something that most people even are aware of. But wasn't he like a religious loon who believed that he was the prophet of God in the New World? I mean, I don't know exactly whether or not his rebellion was justified or not, but on the face of it, I don't trust the decision-making process of somebody who thinks that they're a prophet of God. But that's just me. I mean, if I had to guess, he might have been completely in the right, but if I had to guess, that would be like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not going to put my stamp of approval of somebody who comes to conclusions like he's the prophet of God in the New World. Somebody check my history. Isn't that what happened? Somebody, like, I don't know. Anyways, maybe I'm not a proper Canadian. Okay. Let's move on to the next patron question. Secular Sakai saying, how common is it for ex-Muslims? Oh, he started the question by something else, but I just put the... Let me actually get the rest of the question. He said the ultimate haram question, Canadian bacon or American bacon. Okay, but then he started with his actual question. The actual question is, how common is it for ex-Muslims to still find pork unappealing after leaving the faith? On average, does the idea of eating it feel empowering, uncomfortable, or neutral to yourself and others you have known? Okay, so there is no way for me to give you the average because I don't have access to any scientific polls on this, okay? So if I tell you my feelings or the experience of the ex-Muslims I know, this is a very small sample size. And it's also not randomized, okay? So you cannot use my experience as a way to judge whether how most ex-Muslims feel about pork, okay? So yeah, I did find it liberating for myself to be able to enjoy pork and we're like, here's another pleasure that I don't feel guilty over, unlike these other people who have to, you know, there's a lot of things that you feel like. Sometimes I remind myself, how awesome is it that I get to enjoy these things without ever feeling guilty about it, right? So I did find it liberating. But I'm like always been rebellious. I always like doing things that I've been told that I shouldn't be doing. I enjoy it. The more, especially, you know, I mean, if it's not harming anybody and they told me that it's taboo and you shouldn't be doing, I get extra joy out of doing those things that I'm not supposed to be doing. So, you know, I have this, like, I don't know, rebellious thing inside my head that makes me get joy out of it. But I don't know if other people are like that. I know a lot of ex-Muslims that know there's nothing, you know, that still feel disgusted eating pork. They can't even imagine themselves eating pork, even though they know that they have been brainwashed. In fact, right under this question, Secular Proton answered. Secular Proton said, ex-Muslim here, so Secular Proton himself is an atheist, ex-Muslim, atheist. He's saying, I struggle to eat pork for some strange reason. I definitely can't eat a pork steak, but I can consume, let's say, a pizza with a little bit of ham. I know ex-Muslims who say that if there is pork in the food, like give me pork without telling me that there's pork in there, right? So I know that as well, right? Like let me enjoy it and then after it's done, tell me that I just ate pork. But I don't want to know that I'm eating pork while I'm eating it because I wouldn't be able to finish it, right? So there are some ex-Muslims like that as well. But what is the most common feeling? Do people who are like, oh, well, give me all the bacon in the world because now I'm an ex-Muslim so I can enjoy it, or people who still feel disgusted by it because of the brainwashing, or people who would still be able to enjoy it as long as nobody tells them? I don't know the stats for these things, right? But I've seen all of it. Let me see. So Soha here is an ex-Muslim. She loves bacon. Yeah, a lot of ex-Muslims enjoy being very passionate about bacon because of the poking like they want to do at Islam. So they don't just like bacon, okay? They become bacon extremists, okay? Because they're like they want to... And it's also true with a whole bunch of other things, like with a lot of ex-Muslims I've seen that they go all out with the bacon, but they also go all out with their sexual relationships. Like they go uber liberal, right? So they want to go as far away for anything Islamic as possible. They're like, it's not just sex before marriage that is okay. They want to be like, where's the next orgy? You know what I mean? Like my chains have been broken. Let's do like swinging. Let's do like, I don't know, threesomes. Let's do orgies. What else is there? What else is there that society has made taboo? okay? Because I want to say, I want to go all out. I want to say to all no to all the taboos. So there's like, you know, these are the ex-Muslims that are like me, you know? They found out that they have been limited by these baseless laws, and they're now they want to say no to anything that they think like, okay, if there's a limitation, show it to me so I could piss on it. Those are my people. Because they feel like they were betrayed, like they were lied to all their lives. They're like, okay, I'm not going to let this happen to me ever again. Okay. Oh, Soha celebrated the first day of Ramadan by cooking and eating bacon for breakfast in the morning. Okay, yeah, so secular protest is saying, I am that orgy guy. See? See, I know some ex-Muslims are like this. Okay. Let's go to music guy. Okay, music guy saying thoughts on... Wait. Did we finish? Oh, yeah, we did. Okay. So we finished the Patreon questions. Let's now go to the live chat questions. Music guy saying thoughts on the conservative Ali Mutahari. Oh, Ali Mutahari, former deputy speaker, openly going against the official Islamic Republic's ban on nuclear weapons. Well, okay, the music guy with his... nuanced questions that I don't even know. Did he do that? Oh my god. Really? Okay, I have to look into this. I did not know this. Oh, this guy. I thought you were talking about this man's father. Okay, so this is the son. Yes, he's like a... He would say stuff like that. He's like, he's one of those reformers, so-called reformers, who keeps trying to get popularity with the people by poking at the red lines of the government. Okay, we have a lot of people like that in the Iranian government, but a lot of people in Iran don't, a lot of people in Iran who are anti-reformists, they just say, like, we don't buy this crap. These people are just providing false hope for the people to show, like, oh, my God, look, we're not like them. But give false hope to people for thinking that things are going to get better. But these are the same people. They're actually with them. This is like, this. There's a conspiracy. Again, this is not my words, but there a lot of people think, like, people like him are there to make it seem like we have hope because there are people in the government that are fighting for the people and are pushing the red lines of the government. But it's by design. This is by design, okay? Because we have had the people like this for 40 years and it had led to nothing. So they're saying there's nothing new. People pushing, people pretended like they were doing this for the past 40 years. Oh, so you're saying he said that from the start of the plan was for them to make a nuclear bomb. When did he say that, music guy? Because that is now common knowledge, I think. I mean, we have audio from Fakhrizadeh that shows that that was exactly what their plan was. So it's like he's not revealing anything. I mean, we had some people, I remember we reporting that somebody from IRGC even reported that. So it's not like he's saying something that is a revelation to people anymore. I think there's a lot of reformers who try to win the people by acting like they are poking at the hardliners. Okay, yeah, so you're going to send me a link? Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I guess, music guy, the benefit of this is that, you know, people outside of Iran who keep saying that the government of Iran is not actually trying to get nuclear weapons. The benefit of this is, like, the news report that you're about to send me is that we could be like, listen, you idiots, it's even the IRGC and people within Iran's government are claiming this. So I think, like, that's what you're about to send me is going to be very useful, because it will be an ammunition in our case for people who keep claiming that Iran wants nuclear energy only for peaceful things, right? So that's very helpful to have that. Okay. Okay, let's go to next question. All right, Abraham is saying, sorry for spamming, just too curious. You're asking a question. How is this spamming? Do you know what spam means? Okay, so growing up in an Arab country, the general opinion that Iran is bad and destroyed Yemen, Syria. Do Iranians hate Arabs too? Also, what's your opinion on Saddam Hussein? Okay, hold on. There's a whole bunch of questions here. So you say you grew up in an Arab country and the general opinion is that Iran is bad and destroyed Yemen and Syria. Okay, so, and then you ask about Iranians. Okay, so it seems like, I don't know, is the opinion that you're mentioning about, is that the general opinion about the Iranian people or the Iranian government? Because one is not the same as the other. I mean, if you're saying that there's an opinion that the Islamic Republic of Iran is responsible for a lot of destruction in, I don't know how, oh yeah, there's a lot of destruction in Yemen and Syria and Iraq as well. I mean, I don't know if you want to say destroyed, because if you say destroyed, it seems like you're suggesting that they're the only people responsible, right? But I think if you want to adjust it to say the government is responsible for a lot of destruction in these countries, then I think that would be more accurate way to frame it. But I don't know if you could judge the entirety of the Iranian people for that, right? You could just blame the Iranian government for that. Are you suggesting that in these Arab countries, I mean, I don't want to, when you say general opinion, are you saying that this is the majority opinion, and is it against the Iranian people or Iranian government? Okay, so you're saying, you're adding some comments, you're saying there are many who blame Iranians, but not all of them. Okay, of course. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, generalization and bigoted opinions about an entire group of people exists in all countries. I wouldn't assume otherwise, right? So, yeah, so you're saying that these views exist, okay, which is unfortunate. I think the blame should be on the Iranian government, not on the Iranian people, okay, or the entirety of the Iranian people. So let me go to the second part of your question. So do Iranians hate Arabs too? Okay, some Iranians or all Iranians? Because obviously not all Iranians hate Arabs, okay? But unfortunately, racist views against Arabs is common in among Iranians, which is very unfortunate, but that's the reality. In fact, racism is very common in Iran among many races, against many races, but especially against Arab. It's the Arab races, which is very disgusting. And it's actually something that I'm actively trying to fight, right? So for example, actually, let me show this to you guys, right? Part of my activism is to fight racism among Iranians, right? So if you go to, let me show you. Okay, no. So if you go, no, you could just search for this. If you go to this channel called Jumhuriye Bi Khodayan, which is the Persian channel for Atheist Republic, right? So I have a stream. You won't understand any of this, so never mind. I'll just tell you, okay? I have a stream coming up in 24 hours, actually, okay? On the Persian channel, which is with the title, What's Wrong with the Arabian Gulf, right? So the Persian Gulf is the name of the Gulf right on the south of Iran. And some Arab countries want to rename that to the Arabian Gulf. And a lot of Iranians are extremely sensitive about this. And I'm suggesting that this sensitivity, I'm not saying that the name should be changed, okay? But the amount of anger and sensitivity people have about this issue is mostly because of the racist views people have about in Iran, about everything that is Arab. And I want to show that to them. I want to show how much the anger, because a lot of them deny it, right? A lot of Iranians deny that they are racist towards Arabs because they have internalized their racism. But even when they claim they're not racist, they seem to get very triggered about anything that is related to Arabic, right? And I'm doing a couple of streams to show that to them and put that in their faces and show to them their racist views about the world. And this is one of those streams. So I am actively, one of my activisms is to actively fight do racism among Iranians, right? So this is what I'm trying to do. I had many shows like this, and I must say, I don't want to. This is going to sound very self-congratulatory. I think I have been one of the most effective activists in the Persian-speaking world when it comes to fighting racism, right? I haven't seen anybody taking the mantle of fighting anti-Arab racism or other forms of racism within the Iranian community as much as I have. And I have had a lot of people change their opinion because of the content that they have been exposed to. So many people have reached out to me and have changed their views because of what I have shown them, when I put their own views in front of them and ask them to justify it. So this is something I'm very proud of. You know, I know this might not mean a lot to you guys, but this is, you know, I don't just do anti-religion activism. I also do this on the side, and I'm very proud of the effect that I have had over this. Here's a Persian person speaking in Persian. I know we have a rule not to put Persian here, like only speak English, but Rahi is saying in Persian, he's saying, I used to not like Arabic countries, but now I have respect for some Arabic countries. So yeah, there we go. So I don't know if I answered your question, but my dog is okay. Hold on. Okay. I hope I answered your question. Let me know if I did. All right. Let me try to get this. Okay, next question. Why do a lot of Shia Muslims treat the Iranian regime as if it's infallible? I heard so many theories that Imam Mehdi will appear from Iran and that he's in contact with the supreme leader of Iran. Okay, I'm glad that you said a lot, but not all. That was a very accurate question. Well, a lot of the success of the popularity of Shia Islam today is because of Iran, right? So ever since the Safavid Empire, Shia Islam has gotten a major boost and funding and propaganda and funding behind spreading the ideology, right? So Iran, ever since the Safavid Empire, has become the main center of exporting Shia ideology. And that became even more true after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran. It wasn't just that it became a country ruled by Shia mullahs rather than having a king that funds the spreading of Shia Islam. Like, it became the ruling of the mullahs, right? So it would, you know, it's very similar for you to ask, like, why is Wahhabism spreading around the world, right? Saudi Arabia, with the oil money that it has, spent a lot of effort exporting Wahhabi ideology around the world. And that idea became, you know, more prevalent because of the funding of that went behind the spreading of that ideology everywhere, from Pakistan to, you know, Indonesia, Malaysia, to North Africa, everywhere. The funding behind it made that idea become more common. In a similar way, the oil money from Iran was spent in, you know, resources for the spread of the Shiism that is in line with the brand that the Velayat-e Faqih in Tehran approves of, right? So the amount of the resources spent to spread that made that version of, it's not just Twelver Shia Islam, okay? It's a special brand of Twelver Shia Islam, which some people refer to it as Velayat-e Faqih brand of Shia Islam, or some people, for it's more poetic to just call it Khomeinism, right? So when you do that, I mean, imagine before 1979, when Saudi Arabia wasn't spreading Wahhabism around the world, Pakistan, the what you had as Sunni Islam in Pakistan was very different than what it is today. So you could see the effect of the funding that goes into spreading that propaganda, right? What did that do to Pakistan? So you could see how fast, like in 43 years, how major of a shift it has had on people's ideologies, right? So that's very similar to the effect of the Iranian government, the Islamic Republic of Iran, which has done the exact same thing, but a lot more effectively than Saudi Arabia has, right? So that's why you will see the branding of Shia Islam that is in line with what Velayat-e Faqih approves of be more common and be spread wider. So it would be natural to, it would be normal to see, like, you, this is what you would expect for people who believe. I mean, it's in line. You say, why do they consider the Iranian regime to be infallible? Well, because that is their Vatican right now. You know what I mean? That is, the ideology has within it something beyond just Twelver Shiism, right? The ideology that has been spread, that has been funded by Tehran, is Shia, is Twelver Shiism plus Velayat-e Faqih. Who is Velayat-e Faqih? You know, right now the Veli-e Faqih is Khamenei. So Khamenei, in this brand of Shia Islam, Khamenei is the representative of God on earth. Is the person that is supposed to defend Islam in the absence of Imam Mahdi. That is part of the ideology. It's not like, oh, these are happen to just be Shia, and they just also happen to be finding Khamenei infallible. It's not just an accident. It's part of their religion. Khamenei's infallibility is part of their ideology, because that's what it has been spread as the ideology. So it's a brand of Shia Islam. It's a new brand of Shia Islam that has started since Khomeini. I don't know if that answers the question. Does that answer the question? So the short answer is that it's because it's part of the religion to believe, is part of this new religion of Khomeinism for them to believe that. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, saying it does. Okay, great. I don't know if Bojack is like a serious, is role playing or is he serious? Bojack said, "We want peaceful nuclear energy. Why do you oppose it? Why can't you see Iran's success?" What success? I mean, even if they want just peaceful nuclear energy, which they don't, you know, all the evidence shows that they want to be able to make nuclear weapons, but it hasn't brought success. It has brought misery. It has brought poverty. It has brought a lot of hardship to Iranian people. It hasn't brought success. Where's the success? But I'm assuming that you're not serious. Anyways, let me just answer, you know, maybe two more questions and then go. What is this? Okay, I'm in China, they eat dog, or at least they used to years ago. The thought of that makes me angry. I don't know why, but it does. Okay, but I'm glad that you see that it's irrational, okay? Because it's is as weird as us eating chicken, pig, or cow, right? Like, there's nothing more wrong about eating a dog or a cat than it is about eating chicken, cow, or pork, or fish. I mean, maybe not fish. Just, you know, just let's keep it at mammals. So you just you have this disgust feeling about it, but you're admitting that there's nothing rational behind it. Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's fair to point. Okay, we have. What do you think of Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter? Do you think it will be good for online atheist activists? Honestly, I don't know. I mean, we lost our Twitter account. We're going to see if we could get it back because of all this. It would be weird if we can't get it back, even after Elon Musk claims that this is not going to be a platform for free speech. You know, this is very, I think we just have to wait and see because we don't know. Like, I mean, Elon Musk has promised a whole bunch of things that never came true, right? And some things that have came true. So I don't know. Like, a lot of people are saying that, oh, he's not going to make it into a platform for free speech because he has been petty about people who have had opinions that disagreed with him. I don't think that follows because he might do that with his own personal decisions. But if he's claiming that the platform is not going to be more pro-free speech, that doesn't mean that he's just because he can't take other people's criticism in his personal life that he's going to make that Twitter's policy. I mean, he might, but I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily follow because all of this talk about how much this is going to be a platform for free speech, it would be bizarre if he all of a sudden wants to now apply, you know, his censorial attitudes in other places all of a sudden on Twitter. Like, it would be so ridiculous that I don't think he's going to do something like that. I just want to know that if he is going to make that happen, I want to know how we could use that to get our Atheist Republic's and my personal and Susanna's personal Twitter account back. Like, what? Like, I'm just waiting to see, like, okay, can how do we, what do we do? can somebody help us? Now this is a free speech platform. Does that mean that we could unban our account? Do you think it will be good for online atheist activists? Honestly, okay, so it depends on what you mean by free. Like, when somebody says that, oh, this is going to be a free speech platform, right? It can't be like there's not going to be any community guidelines. I mean, that's not what they mean, right? Because if you have no community guidelines, then it's going to be a horrible platform for everybody. There's always going to be some rules. Are you going to be able to like threaten people? Are you going to be able to, like, obviously not. Are you going to be able to, like, I don't know, dox ex-Muslims and not get your account removed? Like, obviously, there's going to be certain rules, because if there are no rules, then it will be such a toxic place that most sane people wouldn't want to be in, right? So it really depends on how are you going to figure out. And what if I know India tells Twitter that if you don't have these rules, we're going to block you from India. Like, is Twitter going to leave India? Like, I don't know. I think it's too early to judge right now. Like, I think it's easy for us. It's easy to just sit back and be like, oh yeah, just let everything be there. But then when you're the CEO of a company, you realize, okay, it's not that simple. Like, what if we can't, like, leave India? That's like a huge chunk of our revenue. And India is asking us that we have to have these rules. So what do we do? You know, like, or you're going to realize that, you know, every country has its own laws and they want you to abide by their laws if you want to be operational in the country. And some of their laws are not as free speechy as you want them to be. So are you going to be like leaving all these countries that have, I mean, Europe has those rules. Are you going to be like, tell Europe that, like, oh yeah, we're going to, because we're a platform of free speech, we're not going to abide by your laws? And then Europe will, like, okay, bye-bye Twitter. Like, what are you going to go and fight with the European Union? So I'm just telling you that these things are not as simple as somebody think, like, oh, I just bought Twitter, so we could just remove all the, it might happen. I'm just saying, like, it's too early to judge. You have to, anybody who's coming up with predictions, they're just, I don't know. How, especially with, so here's the problem, when you have a billionaire, especially a billionaire like Elon Musk, he's unpredictable, right? If you were talking about, like, oh, shareholders and boards, like, okay, we have some precedent about how decision processes are made and you can make predictions, right? And this is a problem when you wait for a hero, right? When you wait for, like, the kindness of a billionaire or whatever to save us, instead of trying to fix the systems that give us these results, you don't know, you know, this is not a reliable way for making the world a better place. I mean, I'm saying that as somebody who might benefit from Elon Musk, you know, because we might get our Twitter account back, right? But we don't know how this man thinks, and you can't make any predictions off of it, right? Yeah, but I'm hoping, and I'm just hoping we could get our Twitter account back. Oh, somebody's saying, hi, Armin, I love you. Oh, I love you. I love you back. Well, I know, actually, that was a lie. I don't know you, but I appreciate your love. I'm trying to be honest with you guys. Oh, okay, hold on. I'm going to start these. Okay, I was going to ask only answer two more questions. Okay, D is saying, what are your reading? What are you reading right now? And do you have a favorite book to recommend? I have switched from reading. I mean, I listen to audiobooks on double speed, because listening to audiobooks on double speed is more effective than, like, faster than reading them. And I do get a lot more information more effectively when I'm listening to the audiobook. I mean, I do like, if I read, it's because it's the best way to shut everything down before you go to bed, okay? But I was going through audiobooks a lot, but now I've switched from Audible to just YouTube documentaries and YouTube and Wondrium courses. Wondrium courses and YouTube news, YouTube documentary. And I also listen to all of that on double speed, okay? So on Wondrium, if I want to suggest something on Wondrium, which I'm going to do next because of, I don't know if you guys know about Wondrium. There's a link to Wondrium in the description, but hold on. There's a course in Wondrium about enlightenment thinkers, but it doesn't, like, I was looking for a course like that, but it didn't have that name. How many of you here? Wondrium is basically what used to be called the great courses. Oh, here it is. I found it. Okay. So let me share my screen. This one. Right here. This is what I'm going to do next, because I'm going to need to finish this course for the Persian channel, because I'm going to go and make a whole bunch of streams about this to introduce more people to modern ways of thinking. So this is the course I'm going to want to take next. It's called the Modern Political Tradition. I think this is going to be very good. Look, it has John Locke, you know, it has Rousseau, you know, it has Kant, it has Smith. Oh my God, this is so good. Montesquieu. So I want to introduce more of these thinkers to my Persian audience. So this is what I'm going to do next. So I recommend this one. And again, guys, these are courses. Wondrium, again, use the link in the description if it's still there, check. But these are courses like taught by like university professors. Like, this is like not just like a YouTuber talking about this, right? These are, these are grade A university professors that are not just experts at what they're teaching, but they're also like really good educators. Does that answer your question, D? Oh, this is so sad. You're saying finally made it to one, but I'm leaving. Oh, don't worry. We're going to start a new stream in about, hold on. So I'm ending this Q&A almost soon. But there's a stream coming. If you go to the channel in about two hours from now, there's an upcoming stream right on this channel. So you could join that one, okay? Which is going to be with me, Susanna, and a guest. So join. So you missed out on this one because we're ending the stream soon. But that one is going to start very soon. Okay, let me just do one more question. Abraham asked another question. I forgot to answer anything. Thoughts on Saddam Hussein? Because Iran went to war with him. Okay, I'm not this tribal person that I'm against Saddam Hussein just because Iran went to war with him. Saddam Hussein was independently, even without his war on Iran, he was obviously a brutal dictator, that he was a monster, obviously. Like, I don't think that goes beyond question. Again, go back to the first question that I answered during this live stream. Go to the watch the documentary that I recommended, right? Just search for Iraq DW. There's a 4-episode documentary about Iraq. But my short answer, Saddam was a monster. Yep, music guy, check out Wandrium. It's really good. All right, cool. I'm going to get out of here. Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. A friendly Muslim is saying, do you ever do call-ins? Yeah, okay. So next Q&A. So I tried this with Atheist Republic. I will do this with Secular Jihadists as well, okay? Become channel members, okay? So if you become a channel member, from starting the next Q&A, I will provide a link in the description. No, not in the in the community tab of the channel for members to come hop over and ask their questions live on air. How's that? Okay. So become a channel member. Right next to the subscribe button, there's a join button. If you are a channel member, you could ask your questions. You could come up, ask your questions, and then go down as a member. Okay. So we're going to start doing that. How's that? So, yeah, get your channel memberships right now. And also, I'm about to leave, but make sure you watch the next live stream coming up very soon. And also, don't leave without liking this video. Like it right now, and I'll see you soon, very soon, okay? Like the video right now. Subscribe, hit the share button, and most importantly, hit the like button, okay? Thank you, guys, and I'll see you guys soon with Susanna. All right, bye.